Welcome to Zichud Daf Siman Mem Rabbi Avraham Goldar, and today we're in Masechet Ksubos Daf Beis, the first parak B'suah Niseis. This Masechet has been generously sponsored as a schus v'achzakas haTorah. I want to wish everybody continued hatzlach because we now begin the 15th Masechta in this Daf Yomi Machzor. So the three topics are going to focus on number one. The opening mission of the Masechta states, B'suah Niseis u'yom Ravi u'amana yom Chamishi. A B'suah is married on Wednesday and an Almana is married on Thursday. It then explains why a B'suah is married on a Wednesday. Shabamayim b'Shabbos batei dinim yoshim ba'arayos b'yom hasheni b'yom chamishi. For twice a week, batei dinim are in session in the cities on Mondays and Thursdays. Shimei otanis b'suim hayam mashkin l'beisin, so that if he should have a claim regarding her status as a B'suah, he would arise early in the morning to go to Beisin. Rashi explains that this is the takana that the Rabbanan enacted, so they should get to Beisin while he's still angry. We're concerned that if there's a delay, then he might be appeased, his anger will subside, and then he'll remain with her, even though there's a possibility that she had an adulterous relationship after they got engaged, in which case she would be forbidden to him. Going to Basin will publicize the matter, which might result in Adim stepping forward that she is guilty. Pointing to Rav Yudah said in the name of Shmuel, why did the Rabbanan say that a B'suah is married on Wednesday and not on Sunday as well, when the husband could also go early to Basin on Monday? Shaktu Chachamim al Takanas Benois Yisrael, Shiatoreach Besuda Shoshi Yamim. The Chachamim were hardworking in seeing to the well-being of Jewish women, that the future husband will busy himself preparing for the Suda for three consecutive days, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, Ubravi Konsa, and then marry her on Wednesday. Now that we've learned the reason of Shaktu, that the Chachamim were hardworking for the welfare of the Jewish woman and required the wedding to take place on Wednesday, it follows that when a later Mishnah stated, Higiyaz Man Vonisu, Ochus Mishalua Ochus Betruma, if the designated time to get married had arrived, and they still did not get married, they, referring to the kalas, eat of their husband's food and truma. That if the designated time arrived on a Sunday, mitoch she'inu yachol lichnos, inu malo mazonos. Since a husband is not able to marry or do the takana, he does not have to provide with food until Wednesday. And pointing with you, Rav Yosef inferred from the above discussion that if the chasson or kal became ill, or she began to menstruate, and the wedding had to be postponed due to circumstances beyond the chasson's control, then he would not need to provide her with food. Rava said, "Linyan gittin enokan." Regarding gittin, this is not so. Rush explains that if one gave his wife a get, on condition that it would only be a get if he failed to arrive home by a certain date, and then he failed to do so due to circumstances beyond his control, the get is valid, and he cannot say he was an onus. The Gemara says that apparently Rava holds ein onus begitten and seeks to know where he derived this. The Gemara concludes that Rava based it on his own svara. Really, the get is not valid, but the Rabban were matakin that it is valid mishum tsnuos or mishum prusos, out of concern for modest woman and brazen woman. It was out of concern for tsnuos, for if it was not a valid get, if the husband was an onus, then there will be cases where he was not an onus, but his tsnua wife will assume that he was and will remain an aguna. And it was out of concern for Prutzos, for if he was an onus and the get was not valid, she will say that he was not an onus, the get is valid, and then will go marry someone else. When it's discovered that he was an onus, the get will be batal, and her children from her new husband will be mamzerim. So once again, the 3 points are number one. The opening mission of the Masechta states, B'suah Niseis u'yom Ravi u'almana yom Chamishi. A B'suah is married on Wednesday, and an almana is married on Thursday. It then explains why a B'suah is married on a Wednesday. Shabamayim b'Shabbos batei dinim yoshim ba'arayos b'yom hasheni b'yom chamishi. For twice a week, batei dinim are in session in the cities on Mondays and Thursdays. Shimei otanis b'suim hayam mashkin l'beisin, so that if he should have a claim regarding her status as a B'suah, he would arise early in the morning to go to Beisin. Rashi explains that this is the takana that the Rabbanan enacted, so they should get to Beisin while he's still angry. We're concerned that if there's a delay, then he might be appeased, his anger will subside, and then he'll remain with her, even though there's a possibility that she had an adulterous relationship after they got engaged, in which case she would be forbidden to him. Going to Basin will publicize the matter, which might result in Adim stepping forward that she is guilty. Pointing to Rav Yudah said in the name of Shmuel, why did the Rabbanan say that a B'suah is married on Wednesday and not on Sunday as well, when the husband could also go early to Basin on Monday? Shaktu Chachamim al Takanas Benois Yisrael, Shiatoreach Besuda Shoshi Yamim. The Chachamim were hardworking in seeing to the well-being of Jewish women, that the future husband will busy himself preparing for the Suda for three consecutive days, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, Ubravi Konsa, and then marry her on Wednesday. Now that we've learned the reason of Shaktu, that the Chachamim were hardworking for the welfare of the Jewish woman and required the wedding to take place on Wednesday, it follows that when a later Mishnah stated, Higiyaz Man Vonisu, Ochus Mishalua Ochus Betruma, If the designated time to get married had arrived, and they still did not get married, they, referring to the Kalas, eat of their husband's food and truma. That if the designated time arrived on a Sunday, mitok she'inu yachol lichnos, inu malo mazonos. Since a husband is not able to marry or do the takana, he does not have to provide with food until Wednesday. And point number three, Rav Yosef inferred from the above discussion that if the chasson or kal became ill, or she began to menstruate, and the wedding had to be postponed due to circumstances beyond the chasson's control, then he would not need to provide her with food. Rava said, "Linyan gittin ain't okay." Regarding gittin, this is not so. Rush explains that if one gave his wife a get, on condition that it would only be a get if he failed to arrive home by a certain date, and then he failed to do so due to circumstances beyond his control, the get is valid, and he cannot say he was an onus. The Gemara says that apparently Rava holds ein onus begitten and seeks to know where he derived this. The Gemara concludes that Rava based it on his own svara. Really, the get is not valid, but the Rabban were matakin that it is valid mishum tsnuos or mishum prusos, out of concern for modest woman and brazen woman. It was out of concern for tsnuos, for if it was not a valid get, if the husband was an onus, then there will be cases where he was not an onus, but his tsnuah wife will assume that he was and will remain anaguna. And it was out of concern for Prutzos, for if he was an onus and the get was not valid, she will say that he was not an onus, the get is valid, and then will go marry someone else. When it's discovered that he was an onus, the get will be batel, and her children from her new husband will be mamzerim. All right, so now we go to our siman dav beis, and our standard siman is a bias, a house. A house, so here goes. This special Wednesday night chasna house, specializing in besula marriages, located right next to a beis din, let chasanim come and prepare the su'uda 3 days in advance. And reminding them while onsim can get in the way of a wedding date, that ain't onus begitten. Once again, slow motion. This special Wednesday night chasna house, that must mean we're on daf beis, bias. This special Wednesday night chasna house, specializing in besula marriages, located right next to a beis din, which reminds us, the opening mission of the Masechta states, besula nisas yom ravi, ulamana yom chamishi, a besula is married on Wednesday, and an almana is married on Thursday. It then explains why a besula is married on a Wednesday. Shepamai b'shabbos batidin yoshim b'arayos v'yom hasheni v'yom chamishi. But twice a week, batidinim are in session on Mondays and Thursdays, shima yolotanis besumi a mashkim basin, so that if he should have a claim regarding her status as a besula, he would arise early in the morning to go to basin. Rashi explains that this is a takana that the Rabbanan enacted so that he should get the basin while he's still angry. So, this special Wednesday night chasna house, specializing in besula marriages, located right next to a beis din, let chasanim come and prepare the suda 3 days in advance, which reminds us, Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, why did the Rabban say that a besula is married on Wednesday and not on Sunday as well, when the husband could also go early to beis din on Monday? Shaktu chachamim al takanas banos Yisrael, shiotoreach besuda shloshim yamim. The chachamim were hardworking and seeing to the well-being of Jewish women that the future husband busy himself preparing for the suda for 3 consecutive days, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, and then marry her on Wednesday. So, this special Wednesday night chasna house, specializing in besula marriages, located right next to a beis din, let chasanim come and prepare the suda 3 days in advance, and reminding them while onsin can get in the way of a wedding date, that ain onus begitten, which reminds us, Rav Yosef inferred that if a chasson or kal became ill, or she began to menstruate, and the wedding had to be postponed due to circumstances beyond the chasson's control, then he would not need to provide her with food. Rava said, "Linyan gittin ain okan." Regarding gittin, this is not so. Rush explains that if one gave his wife a get on condition that it would only be a get if he failed to arrive at home by a certain date, and then he failed to do so due to circumstances beyond his control, the get is valid, and he cannot say he was an onus. The Gemara says that apparently Rava holds that ain onus begitten, and seeks to know where he derived this. So once again, this special Wednesday night chasna house, specializing in besula marriages, located right next to a beis din, let chasanim come and prepare the suda 3 days in advance, and reminding them while onsin can get in the way of a wedding date that ain onus begitten. All right, now it's time for a 4 blah blah chazara. Daf Kuf Yud Tes. So the simmer Daf Kuf Yud Tes is a kite. So here goes. The woman whose husband died overseas and decided to fly a kite. A kite? That must mean we're on Daf Kuf Yud Tes. The woman whose husband died overseas and decided to fly a kite while she was waiting to hear if her tzar was pregnant, which reminds us, the Mishnah stated, Ha'isha Shahalach Baal of Tzarasu Midian Siyam, a woman whose husband and tzara went overseas and people came and said to her, your husband died, she can't marry a stranger nor be taken in Yibum until she determines whether her tzar is pregnant. The rest, why she may not marry a stranger? If the concern is that her tzar may not be pregnant so that she's chai to be taken in Yibum, I could say, follow the majority of women, and the majority of women do conceive and give birth. Therefore, it's safe to assume that Tzara gave birth to a viable child overseas, and she's exempt from Yibum and permitted to a stranger. The Gemara says the mission is going according to Rabbi Meir, the Chai Shul Miyuta, who's concerned for the minority. But according to the Rabban, who go according to the majority, the widow would be permitted to a stranger. So the woman whose husband died overseas and decided to fly a kite while she was waiting to hear if her tsar was pregnant was embarrassed when it flew over 9 kosher stores in one trefon and landed on a piece of meat, which reminds us, the Gemara suggests that the Mishnah could even be in accordance with the Rabbanan. For when did they go after the rove? It's only in a case of Ruba de Eitz Kaman, a rove that is before us. Like the cases of 9 stores or Sanhedrin, the case of 9 stores is when meat is found in the street and it's not known whether it comes from one of 9 stores that sells kosher meat or from the one store that sells treif. But in both cases, the majorities are before us and we can rule the meat is kosher and the person is acquitted. But in a case where the majority is not before us, such as in our case, where the majority is based on the premise that most women in the world conceive and give birth, the Rabbanan do not find the majority. The Gemara rejects as proving that the Rabbanan go with rove even when the majority is not before us. So the woman whose husband died overseas and decided to fly a kite while she was waiting to hear if her tsar was pregnant was embarrassed when it flew over 9 kosher stores in one trefon and landed on a piece of meat right in between the wives of 2 brothers who claimed their husbands had passed away. Which reminds us, the next Mishnah states that if the wives of 2 brothers return from overseas and this one says my husband died and this one says my husband died, zo asur mifnei baal shozo, zo asur mifnei baal shozo, this one is prohibited to marry a stranger on account of that one's husband, and that one is prohibited to marry a stranger on account of this one's husband. Rashi explains that each woman is prohibited, for perhaps each brother-in-law is alive, and they are chayv and yibum. They cannot rely on each other's testimony, since we learn in the Mishnah that one of the women who is not believed to give testimony that another woman's husband has died is her yibimta, her brother-in-law's wife. Daf kuf chaf, so the simmer daf kuf chaf is a cook, so here goes. The cook, that must be learned daf kuf chaf. The cook at the Wild Safari restaurant, who identified the corpse as one of the waiters based on his face, forehead, and nose, which reminds us, it was taught in a brisa, witnesses only see a corpse's forehead without the form of a face, or only the form of the face without the forehead, they may not testify ad shushneim mimachotem until both are seen together with the nose. So the cook at the Wild Safari restaurant, who identified the corpse as one of the waiters based on his face, forehead, and nose, discovered he had the same birthday and same mole as the victim, which reminds us, Rabbi rejected Abai's interpretation of a machlokas and said that everyone agrees that simanim are valid in the raisa, but here in the case of the mole, they disagree b'shuma mitsuya b'mengila with a mole, which is commonly found in the same part of the body as one's bengilo, which Rashi explains as someone born at the same hour and therefore has the same mazel. The Rabbanan hold that a mole is commonly found on a ben gila and therefore is not a valid simon to identify the corpse. And Rabbi Eliezer ben Mahabai holds a mole is not commonly found. The Gemara brings alternative versions of Rabbah's explanation. So the cook at the Wild Safari restaurant, who identified the corpse as one of the waiters based on his face, forehead, and nose, discovered he had the same birthday and same mole as the victim, who had been tragically attacked in his vital organs by a wild beast. Which reminds us, the Mishnah state, Ein me'idin ela ad shetetzei nafsho. They may not testify that a man is dead until they see that his soul has departed, even though they saw him suffering from being hacked, or hanging from a gallows, or devoured by a wild beast. Reviewed a set of name of Shmur regarding the wild beast, they taught this only when the animal is seen eating from an area in the body from which the soul does not depart, referring to non-vital organs or limbs, but from a place where the soul departs, meaning the vital organs, such as the brain, heart, or intestines, they may testify. Daf kuf chaf alef, so the simmer daf kuf chaf alef is a cocoa bean farmer. So here goes. When Pedro the cocoa bean farmer, that must mean we're on daf kuf chaf alef. When Pedro the cocoa bean farmer fell into the pool of cave water, which reminds us, the next Mishnah states, Nafal amayim, if a man fell into water and was not seen to come up, ben she'esh lehensov, ben she'ein lehensov, ishto asura, whether the water has an end or the water has no end, his wife is forbidden to marry, for he still may be alive. Abai defines water that has an end as kol she'omed v'roa ma'arba ruchoseh, any body of water small enough that one stands in one place and can see its 4 sides. Rashi gives the example of one who sees someone fall into a pool of water in a cave where he can see all its banks. So when Pedro, the cocoa bean farmer, fell into the pool of cave water, he grabbed onto a daf and bowed his head whenever a wave came. Which reminds Rabbi Gamliel related what Rabbi Kiva said to him in explaining how he was saved from a sinking ship. Rabbi Gamliel said, he said to me, daf shel sfinin nizdamen li. There was a daf, a board from the ship that came before me, and I grabbed onto it. And before every wave that came upon me, I bowed my head and it passed over me. The Brisa continues that if Rashaim come upon a person, let him bow his head before them and the danger will pass. Rashi explains that he should restrain himself and not antagonize them. So, when Pedro, the cocoa bean farmer, fell into the pool of cave water, he grabbed onto a daf and bowed his head whenever a wave came, while watching off in the distance the young girl being pulled out of the water by an elderly man with a ram. Which reminds us, the Gemara relates the story of Rabbi Chinan ben Dosa davening for the daughter of Nechunya Chofer Shichin, Nechunya the ditch digger, who fell into a cistern, and after davening for her, she emerged. They said to Rabbi Chinan ben Dosa that he was a Navi, to which he responded that he was not. Rather, he reasoned, Davrusha, Tzadik Mesasik Bo, Yechashu Bo Zaro, is it possible that something a Tzadik occupies himself for the Tzibur, his child should stumble upon it? The Gemara addresses, how then did Nechunya's son die of thirst? Daf Kuf Chav Beis, so the similar Daf Kuf Chav Beis is corn on the cob. So here goes. After a bus call in the mountain was heard that said, Kivi, the corn on the cob salesman, is dead. Corn on the cob? That must move on Daf Kuf Chav Beis. After a bus call in the mountain was heard that said, Kivi, the corn on the cob salesman, is dead. Which reminds us, the next Mishnah states regarding testifying to a man's death to permit his wife to remarry, Masin Alpi Baskol. We permit a woman to remarry based on a baskol, without the person making the statement being seen. There was an incident where someone stood on top of a mountaintop and proclaimed, Ish pony ben pony, mamakum pony mace. Pony ben pony from such and such a place died. They went up and found no one there, yet the Rabbanim permitted the wife to remarry. When the Gemara asks why she was permitted to remarry when perhaps the voice was that of a shade, a demon, it concludes that they saw the shadow of the shadow. And Rabbi Chinan related that Jonas in the shade said that demons do not have shadows of shadows. So after a bus call on the mountain was heard that said, Kivi, the corn on the cob salesman, is dead. The witnesses who met up with a woman innkeeper who said she had buried him, and here was his butter's knife and dental floss, which reminds us the next mission teaches that Rabbi Kiva originally held that we do not permit a woman to remarry based on the testimony of a woman, slave, or shivcha. The final mission of the Masechta brings the challenge that was brought to Rabbi Kiva based on the incident where the woman innkeeper was believed that a guest from a group of Levim had died since she brought the Levi's staff, pouch, and sefer Torah that he had. The Gemara clarifies that the Pundakis was an idolater, Masikha Lafituma, and she was speaking offhandedly, and that's why she was believed. When the Gemara challenges this, since they had asked her where her friend was, it answers that as soon as she saw him, she started to cry, which is what prompted them to ask where he was. So after a bus call on the mountain was heard that said, Kivi, the corn on the cob salesman, is dead. The witnesses who met up with the woman innkeeper who said she had buried him, and here was his butter knife and dental floss, were not cross-examined with drishas and chakiras because his wife was collecting her ksuba. Which reminds us, it was taught in a brisa, ain bodkin eidin nashim bedrisha v'chakir. We do not check witnesses who testify for women that their husbands died with cross-examination and questioning, according to Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Tarfon says, bodkin, we do check them, even though Dvar Torah echod dinim mamonos ve'echod dinim nefashos bedrisha v'chakira. Under Torah law, both monetary and capital cases get drisha v'chakira. For the pasuk states, mishpat echod yelechem, there should be one law for you. The reason the Rabbanan said the witnesses for monetary cases do not get checked is shultino delos bifnei lovin. So you'll not close the door in the face of borrowers. Rabbi Kiva holds that since in the case of testifying that a woman's husband died, there's a collection of the ksuba, it's like a monetary case. Whereas Rabbi Tarfon holds that since we're permitting the woman to marry someone else, it's similar to din nefashos. And Rashi explains that it's because a man who has relations with a married woman gets chenek, strangulation. All right, so that concludes today's shiur. This is Rabbi Avraham Goldman Zichron wishing you a great day and great learning.